Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, my producer and co-host, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
How you doing?
Doing good. Hey, Waverly. We're at Waverly right now. And I just want to thank everybody who's come out to join us and have a little fun. I'm looking forward to the investigations, which start tomorrow and Tuesday. We got a great show for you tonight. We're going to get to that in a minute. I do want to make a couple of announcements real quickly. Tickets are still on sale for the Queen Mary retreat in December, but we have very few tickets remaining. So if this is something that you've been thinking about attending, you're going to want to jump on the bandwagon and be a part of it. The guest list is phenomenal. We have Jason and Grant from the Ghost Hunters. We have Chris Fleming from Dead Famous. We've got Mr. Patrick Burns from the TV show Haunting Evidence. On the list, we also have Tiffany Johnson and Chip Coffee. The mediums will be on hand with us. Also, Reese Christian will be there, Atlanta's foremost psychic medium, I believe, as well as the way she bills herself. Comes very highly recommended, so we're going to be having her attend. They're going to be offering a panel discussion discussing the their abilities, how they work, doing some little mini readings. Plus, they'll be offering mini readings at the event. We've also got author Marie D. Jones that'll be on hand. And, of course, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, the Queen of Paranormal. She's written over 30 books covering just about every aspect of the paranormal. She's going to be on hand with us and is a good friend of the show. Plus, don't forget, we have some great entertainment lined up for you at night during the investigations when your group is not investigating. You'll get to be treated to a comedy improv show by actor-comedian Dean Haglund. You know him from the TV show X-Files and The Lone Gunman. He was Langley. We also have actress Kelly Maroney, who's going to be on hand showing a midnight showing of her cult classic 80s horror movie, Night of the Comet. She'll be there to do autographs and meet with you, and Dean Haglund will be autographing and meeting with you as well. We've got Barry Conrad just added to the bill, who's going to be coming on and sharing some of his amazing evidence that he's collected for documentaries that you've seen on the Sci-Fi Channel. We've also got, Tim, my mind's going blank on here, Erica Frost, who is the current resident psychic on the Queen Mary, and we are still in negotiations right now to replace the late Mr. Peter James, who will not be with us. We are negotiating with a few different people, and I think Tim and I, maybe what we should do is throw a little poll up on our website so people can click and decide who we should have as our next guest.
There you go.
We're looking at John Oliver from Haunting Evidence. Mm-hmm. We're looking at, good grief, my mind just went blank again on who the other gentleman was. Our good friend Richard Felix from Most Haunted, the paranormal historian, if you will, is interested in being a part of the event with us. So we'll be putting those two guys up there. And I'm also working on a surprise female guest that I can't mention yet. But we'll be adding her to the list, and people can decide which one they'd like us to bring on as our next one.
You got me Halle Berry, didn't you?
I did.
Oh, no, look I at didn't. You.
You need some help. We are going to be doing great event out there. John Zaffis, the demonologist, is also going to be out there doing a talk on demonology, the ins and outs, and giving some of the evidence and interesting facts that he's collected over his 30-plus years of investigating the paranormal and dealing with exorcisms and the field of demonology. And our next guest, Tim, we're trying to get a deal done so we can have our next guest at the event with us as well.
Let's make him an offer he can't refuse.
That's what I like to do. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd please do me a big favor and give a very loud cyber round of applause for our next guest. We have Dr. Barry Taff with us. And Dr. Taff earned his doctorate in parapsychology with a minor in biomedical engineering from UCLA. He holds 6 medical patents. From 1969 through 1978, he worked out of the former parapsychology laboratory at UCLA's Neuropsychiatric Institute as a research associate, where he studied telepathy, precognition, and remote viewing, as well as poltergeists, doppelgangers, and UFOs. Dr. Taff's research has been published in numerous journals, periodicals, magazines, and books over the last 25 years, and he's been the principal investigator on more than, can you believe this, Tim? He's done more than 3,500 cases dealing with poltergeist and hauntings, one of which became the best-selling book and motion picture, The Entity. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the darkness on the edge of town, Dr. Barry Taff. Good evening, Dr. Taff.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you very much for joining us here this evening.
I want to correct, you made a couple technical errors in your opening statements with regard to me. No one ever has received a doctorate in parapsychology from UCLA because they never had that program there. My doctorate is in psychophysiology, which is the interrelationship of the brain to the body to behavior. The parapsychology was the research I did, but UCLA never had a doctoral program in anything related to the paranormal, unfortunately.
Well, that's it. We're just going to have to fire our fact checker, Tim.
I'm sorry. I'll pack my stuff and go.
And also one other little tidbit. My case files now exceed 4,300.
4,300?
Yeah, 3,500 was probably looking at something that's quite dated.
Wow, so I would
say so. 4,300
cases. 4,300 cases. Do you ever have time to just hang out at home and watch TV, Dr. Taff?
Yeah. Most cases go nowhere. Most cases begin and end with the initial interview and videotaping and then the instrumentation, get your readings, measurements. And very rarely is there a follow-up because most cases don't warrant it because the frequency and magnitude of the phenomena is not significant.
You know, let me ask you real quickly, as we mentioned at the end of the little intro for you, that you worked with the probably one of the most famous cases, the Entity case. And I know I told you before we had you on the show, we didn't want to dig too much into that because I'd like to cover some of the other things that are going on in the parapsychology field. But one thing that I'm curious about is, give us your definition. I've heard it referred to as a poltergeist case, but so many people seem to throw that word around for so many different things. And, of course, I guess it's a German word meaning noisy ghost. And so many people believe that it's more of like a PK energy, especially found around pre-adolescent teenage girls or girls that are coming into maturity seems to really attract poltergeist activity. But this case involved rape and horrible other beatings and things like that from these spirits. Is that still considered to be a poltergeist-type activity?
Well, first we have to understand this case was occurring in the summer of 1974. So our understanding with regard to this phenomenon was very crude compared to what it is today. When my colleague at the time met Doris Beither, that's the name of the woman who the case is based on, not Carlotta Moran. That is the name of the woman in the book, in the movie.
Right.
The woman's real name was Doris Beither. My colleague was in Hunter's Books in Westwood, and he's talking to another friend about our research. Well, Doris and one of her friends hears my colleague talking and says, oh, excuse me, but I've got a haunted house. And rather than sound like an idiot in front of strangers, he made an appointment for us to go out there. A little bit later in the week, we went there, and this is August 22nd, 1974, Culver City, a street called Braddock, B-R-A-D-D-O-C-K. It's a small suburb of L.A. Sitting down with her for an interview, the first thing she tells us, the very first thing is she'd been repeatedly sexually accosted, raped by an entity, and by a spirit, a ghost, whatever. And we rolled our eyes back and went, oh, my God.
Had you ever heard of that type of thing occurring prior to this case?
Well, if you look back into the anecdotal literature, going back centuries, there are terms such as incubus and succubus, and supposedly spirits that sexually torment people in their sleep. The question is, how much of it's real? How much of it's religious hysteria? How much of it's fantasy? And right now, no one knows, but I'll tell you one thing. After interviewing her for maybe an hour, hour and a half, and taking a tour of the house, there were some interesting aspects. One is, it was very, very warm in August of 1974, and her house was a little sort of bungalow, and very, very warm, except the bedroom, where most of the phenomena was allegedly occurring, was extremely cold, and yet there was no air conditioning in the house. So this didn't make sense. And then we went into the house, there was a very foul odor, which again seemed to have its locus in the bedroom. It smelled like decomposing organic matter, like something had died. And we listened to her stories. We thought, well, you know, this woman needs psychiatric care. We thanked her for her time, and we left. About a week or so later, she called back and said some neighbors had experienced stuff, so reluctantly we returned. And we're interviewing her in the kitchen, and her eldest son, lower cupboard door swings open, and a frying pan, an iron skillet, flies out. It doesn't drop out. It flies out, taking a parabolic arc, hits the floor maybe 10 feet away.
Wow.
Well, no springs, no wires, no children in the cupboard. That was the beginning of an onslaught that evolved into a wide array of psychokinetic manifestations. Now, at one point towards the end of the investigation, I don't have the date right in front of me, but we were all there, and we started seeing balls of light. They looked like ball lightning, except they had tails on them. They were always lime green in color, and they were just three-dimensional. They were zipping around the room. So we got a photograph of one, and the problem was there was no reference. How big is it? Where's it coming from, going to? It was totally in a vacuous region. So from that point on, we put up poster boards with duct tape on all the walls and the ceiling. Each board had a number. Each board had a magnetic orientation. So we saw more of the lights. We got one example of that photographically. Kodak Tri-X film pushed to 6400 ASA, and we had our flash filtered almost into the near infrared. And then another point, a couple weeks later, we're in the bedroom, about 25 of us, hot, and then it got real cold, and suddenly the lights coalesced in the corner of the room, and we could see from the waist up a large apparition of a man. You could see the shoulders, you could see the brow ridge, you could see the jaw, the chest, the arms, and it was dynamic, it was moving, and then poof, just gone, again in lime green in color. And this was extraordinary. And two of my assistants, passed out. We heard a big thud. We thought, what was that? Looked down, and they were just laying there. They passed out from shock. Other instances, she called us not long after that one night, and she said that the poster boards had been torn down. Well, of course, she could have done that, even though she's a very, very small woman. Went to the house. They were indeed torn down, as was the plaster and the paint with it. And, you know, what do we do? At another point, candelabras flew at her. The fuse box was torn out of the wall and thrown at her. One point, before we came into the case, her son heard her screaming, came into the bedroom, and saw her being bounced around in the bed like a rag doll with this greenish thing around her. And he went to help it, and he was just thrown back into the wall like in the movie. And the movie really, in my opinion, didn't do justice to the case. The book was extraordinary. And Frank DiFelitta did an extraordinary job on writing this. Unfortunately, the script was rewritten by the director, which is like, what else is new?
Right.
And what they showed looked more like tracer rounds, which, of course, is just not what we saw. And the apparition was not depicted accurately. However, with the assistance of my colleague, Barry Conrad, and one of our friends, he's a very gifted effects artist named Rod Matsui, we created our own version of what was observed, which I'd say is almost 100% accurate. This can be seen if you rent the Entity DVD. You can, special feature section, it's part of it's there. If you get Barry Conrad's show, it's called California's Most Haunted, there's a section which is specifically about the Entity case.
Right, I just watched that last night, right. And I saw that, and I saw the footage of the character. That was very creepy. Right.
Now, what's interesting, at one point, you got a picture of Doris cowering on her bed beneath these lights flying over. And the picture we got was even more spectacular than what we saw. This is before the apparitions appeared. And there's an arc of light framing Doris. Well, right behind her, the walls meet at a 90-degree angle. Well, had this been a projected light source, it would have been bent in accordance with the walls.
Right.
It was not. It was in free space. Hmm. Another shot, when Doris had left the room, we saw two more arcs at 90-degree angles to each other, again in free space. The reason what we thought we got was the same way if you set up a camera and a telescope. If it isn't on a mount that tracks, that moves, you get streaks as opposed to just stars.
Okay.
This is what we thought we got. Our shutter speed was not sufficient. I think we were 1/60th of a second. We needed a faster shutter speed than that to freeze what we were observing. And what's the most impressive thing was she finally moved from Culver City to Carson. We lost track of her for a couple months. We found her again. She was not exposed to the media. In those days, there was very little media compared to today with the Internet and all the channels. Within weeks after she moved into a new place, phenomena began, not only in her home, but the homes flanking her. And no one knew who this woman was. We went to great lengths to prevent this. And for her own peace of mind, obviously. And things started happening, flying around, banging noises, lights. We were there a few months later, and we're sitting in the middle of the room. We put on this music that her son said would trigger the phenomena, which it did. And suddenly a vase flies into the middle of the room and shatters right in the middle of all of us. But it missed all of us, luckily. And then we had a voice-activated recorder, and it was going with a condenser mic. And whatever we heard, something approach the mic. Footstep, another footstep, and then it dragged. A footstep, then it dragged. It sounded like a B-horror movie from Universal in the 40s,
right,
like The Mummy.
Right.
And whatever it was, it shut off the recorder, which had never been shut off prior to or since then on any occasion by itself. So the fact that, she moved, it followed her. Her and people around her, they come home, they find furniture moved, garbage dumped on the floor, dishware on the floor. It kept going and going. So she moved from there to San Bernardino. It followed her there. San Bernardino to Texas, it followed her there. We lost track of her. We really didn't have much to do with her again until the film came out in February of '83. And by that time, it had all been ended to her obvious relief. Now, when these phenomena move with people, it may suggest, underline the word may, that we might be dealing with something a little more complicated than a poltergeist or psychokinetic manifestation. A little more complicated, actually, than a haunting, because this is related to a person. And the pattern we've seen over the last 38 years appears that most of this stuff, I'd say 99% of it, comes from us, living people.
Right.
And the one thing that's most intriguing about all of this is the fact that the majority of the people that have these psychokinetic maelstroms are either seizure-prone or epileptic. And when they take their meds to quell the seizures, not only do the seizures disappear, but the phenomena goes away as well.
Hmm.
Now, there is a certain percentage of the population that is epileptic, but they may never know it because it's never been kindled to the level of triggering a seizure. And what's even more intriguing is that the majority of the cases we've investigated, now we know what questions to ask. In the 70s, we didn't know what was going on. We were just shotgunning our questions, hoping to get answers that told us anything. The majority of poltergeist agents, whether it be young or old, tend to be seizure-prone or epileptic. And there's also the majority of people who were suffering from epilepsy and seizures aren't poltergeist agents. So it's unilateral. We don't understand why it doesn't move in both directions. Again, to make the point, the majority of poltergeist agents we're running into tend to have either epilepsy or they're seizure-prone, temporal lobe lability.
Wow, that
However, the majority of people with seizure-prone and epilepsy are not poltergeist agents. So what are we missing? We don't know. We do know also that there seems to be an electromagnetic correlation to this. If the right type of person is exposed to a strong magnetic field, 60 cycle or other, it can seemingly trigger this within certain people if you're sensitive to this. We don't know what that sensitivity implies yet.
Well, Dr. Taff, we have to take our first break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with our guest, Dr. Barry Taff. We'll be back with more right after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I gotta pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. I'm Dave Schrader. Along with me, our guest this evening is Dr. Barry Taff. And before the break, we were talking about, and you brought up a really interesting point, Dr. Taff, of how things have progressed and now knowing the right questions to ask and learning so much as you have over the last 30 years of paranormal investigations. In your belief, if you knew now, or if you knew then what you know now, how much further would the field of parapsychology have advanced by now?
It might have advanced to a point where this phenomenon is demonstrable. Rather than sitting around scratching your head, all right, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Why does it happen while we're here? Why does it always seem to occur when we're not paying attention or monitoring the environment? The last several years alone have been stupendous in terms of the data we've collected. I'm convinced now that given what we know, if we could modify certain environments electromagnetically, we might be able to trigger these events rather than waiting for them to occur. It's called driving them, changing the magnetic envelope, the parameters of the environment, ionic parameters. It'll take time, wouldn't be cheap, but rather than waiting for people and they go, yeah, nothing's happening here, we could make it happen, and then we might come to a greater understanding as to why and how it's occurring. We do know, for example, I was on a case last year with Barry Conrad. We worked together, and it was in Covina, West Covina. Woman moved in the house with her family, her husband, a couple of children, like 12 years ago, and was a fixer-upper. And then they started having strange experiences, banging noises. They heard footsteps, disembodied voices. Things were flying off shelves. Machines would turn on and off. They had two young children. The husband starts developing strange behavioral patterns, and he tried to kill his family.
Oh, my.
Was arrested, put in jail. They gave all these tests. They released him. He seemed fine. Back at home, he started behaving oddly again, and he blows his brains out in the kitchen, in the dining room. What they discovered, the man who built the house many years earlier had done the exact same thing. The phenomenon was continuing. Now, we were there. We measured 60 cycle electromagnetic fields from bleeding wires and just poor insulation. The house was like being in a battery.
Right.
And if you feel sick. Energy was so high, it went over range. Our instruments weren't powerful enough to record it. It was over the range of our instruments. The worst part was the DC fields, 0 to about 40 cycles per second. Magnetic fields were also high. And what's even more fascinating, when the woman moved in, she's an athlete, young woman, the wife, and good physique and all that, very energetic. She gets sicker. She got sicker and sicker. And guess what? She develops epilepsy. So again, the correlation between this phenomena and the neurochemical process in the brain, or neural, And I said to her, look, forget the phenomena. Get out of the house. She said, why? You think that what's here is going to hurt me? I said, I don't think whatever the phenomena is going to hurt you, but I said the energy in the house will hurt you. So she moved.
And it went away from?
Once you get epilepsy, it doesn't go away. I mean, you treat it. You treat the symptoms.
Right.
There's no cure for it. We had another case, began in July of 2005. Well,
could I ask you real quickly, sure. Dr. Taff, from what you just explained with the last case with the gentleman that tried to kill the family and then ended up coming back and killing himself, mm-hmm. it almost sounds reminiscent of the famous Amityville horror case.
Right.
Do you think that there might have been something like that going along as maybe not so much paranormal, but perhaps bad wiring and a high electromagnetic field that might have been messing with their perceptions?
All I know is, okay, I met the Lutzes and Jay Anson right before the book came out.
Okay.
And I wasn't impressed with the case. I read the book. It sounded like a lot of hype. It was so far removed from what's really encountered by most people. It was kind of silly. And I said I remember we were doing a show here at CBS in LA about it with Mario Machado, and he asked what I thought of this, and I said, I'm not impressed. I said, this is too much smoking, too much drinking, a lot of fantasy. There might have been something there, but not at the level that it was described. There was retroactive investigations done by parapsychologists on the East Coast, and they couldn't validate one event discussed in the book. As far as behavioral things, I mean, there are people who are very sensitive to electromagnetic fields. Such in high-intensity fields can make these people sick, can act as an irritant to the central nervous system. Whether that will lead to paranormal events depends on things we don't clearly understand yet.
Isn't there, and help me if I mispronounce the name, isn't there a doctor, I think it's Michael Persinger?
Persinger, right.
Right, mm-hmm. He's been doing experiments with stimulating the temporal lobe.
Correct.
To see if you can stimulate the brain to have paranormal experiences, but aren't they finding with that type of research that they think it's more just misfirings of the brain causing hallucinations?
Mm-hmm. There is a substantial body of evidence from Persinger and others that if certain people are in these highly charged magnetic environments, they can experience both visual and auditory hallucinations. It will affect their behavior, their sleep-wake cycle, circadian rhythms, everything. The question is, just because we can fake something technologically, like just because we can make a movie about going to the moon or Mars, doesn't mean we never went to the moon with the Apollo project. So that's faulty logic. Anything can be simulated today, can be manufactured artificially.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that the real event doesn't occur. Just we have another way of creating it that doesn't involve the processes we're trying to understand here.
Well, what I always thought was interesting with those experiments, I know he only had, what's it called? It was like the happy helmet or something,
right.
We call that, right?
Right.
What I always thought was interesting is why not create two happy helmets, have people sitting next to each other stimulating their brains and see if they both see the same thing, or are they having totally separate? Because according to their thoughts, was it possibly was opening up a portal and allowing the brain, it was removing that trigger in our mind that blocks us from seeing the paranormal that's going on around us all the time. If there were two people there, and they were both seeing the same creature from the corner coming towards them, that would be a lot more compelling evidence to me than they just both are having a bad acid trip, you know, with this electronic stimulator going on the brain.
I know what you're getting at, and it's a really, you've posed a very significant point. See, here's the thing. The bottom line with it is two things. One is there's no such thing as a collective hallucination. So you have a room with, let's say, 25 people, like in the Entity case.
Right.
If this was something that was directly stimulating our brains to produce a visual hallucination, the probability of all of us seeing the same thing at the same time would be astronomical. Because there's variations in the way our bodies respond to these fields. If it was one person, well, who knows what the result.
Right.
But 25 people, no.
Right, so there's no, you've never heard of an actual mass hallucination. I mean, not to be confused with mass hysteria, which one person starts getting agitated and then everybody kind of starts getting fearful and it's jumping, but not the mass hallucination theory. That that doesn't hold water for you?
Right. No. And to bring this point home is this. The question, when people observe apparitions, not while they're sleeping, but when they're awake, and it's unexpected, it comes out of left field, so to speak, they observe them. Are we seeing it? Meaning, are photons being emitted by whatever the source of this is that are entering our eye, that, you know, hit the retina, go to the optic nerve, and go to the occipital region of our brain, or is our brain in some way being affected without going through the optic nerve in the eye? If it's the latter, we can't photograph something that's in the brain because there's no physical analog to it. Now, for example, light photons are produced by electrons jumping from higher to lower orbits within atoms. That's how photons are produced. That's a process of excitation. A lot of things could be excited to emit light. The question is, are we seeing things that are always in the visible spectrum, or is it in the near-infrared or the long-wave ultraviolet? We don't know. And this stuff is too transient and evasive to really put a handle on yet, because we don't know exactly what's going on. All that we know is some people are dramatically affected by this, others are not.
Do you think, if I could ask real quickly, sure, with this, when you were mentioning earlier that some of the people that are prone to epilepsy seem to have a lot more of the poltergeist-type activity around them, if we are truly all just energy-based beings and somebody's brain has got that capability to cause things to move, could that, in fact, then, if that person is hallucinating or not hallucinating but visually seeing this, and you're all in a clustered room, couldn't that create a form of a mass hallucination? Because if that person's brain power is capable of creating physical manifestations and things moving in front of you, couldn't it then affect your mental process and rationalization? Couldn't it be imprinting on your brain, allowing you to see what this person is seeing as well?
Yeah, I think you're describing is what might be called remote influence, where people can... They're like with the apparitions. There was a famous book written by a man named Tyrell called Apparitions. There were several types noted. One was telepathic, when someone is actually able to get into your brain with their brain and make you perceive something that's not physically there. The other is a crisis apparition, where you see a person's apparition, you don't know they're near death or they're in a crisis. You find out many days or hours later that's the case. That's intriguing. Then you have the post-mortem apparition, where the apparition, whoever that person is, has been dead for 48 hours at least, and you're unaware of it. So that brings in, I think we're looking at different layers of this stuff. It isn't all one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But this case we are working on from July of 2005 until early this year in Beverly Hills in Bennington Canyon, it was literally a stone's throw down from where the Charles Manson, you know, Sharon Tate murders took place.
Oh, sure.
1969. Now, this particular property displayed the highest level of geomagnetic energy we've ever seen. So much so that about two-thirds of us who went to this house on numerous occasions became ill when we went there. And the symptoms were interesting. Headache, nausea, stomach problems, whatever your weak link is, that's where it would go. Disorientation, irritability, anxiety. When you leave the house, you have trouble sleeping, and it's an irritant to the central nervous system. The house demonstrated very odd polarities, like the stairwell in the back was positively polarized, yet the front of the house was negatively polarized. And the first time we were there with instruments, July 19th of 2005, we recorded 1.7 Gauss, that's 1,700 milligauss. Hmm. We've never seen that before, ever. And I got very ill. I mean, the first time I was there, I blacked out. The last time I was there, which was June of last year, I blacked out. I blacked out. Other people have gotten sick, and their joints hurt, their neck hurts, they feel sick. A friend of ours went there. The woman, she's a well-known writer, she got sick. Her husband went there and felt like he was hit in the head and the stomach by a baseball bat. That's how severe it was.
Let me ask you, when you're doing an investigation like that then, and you're there with a group of people, do you have people in your group that have absolutely no effect? They don't feel any of it?
Of course. There was a substantial body of people who, they came there, I don't know, what are you talking about? What do you mean? I don't feel anything. Others, like myself and Barry Conrad, and his late girlfriend, Lisa, we all got very ill. And I'll tell you, I couldn't sleep for almost 2 days after being in this guy's house for the first time. And I was very sick. The last time I was at the house, I think it was July 3rd of last year, I spent the next day in the ER here in L.A., the hospital. That's how sick I got.
Why do you think that it's attributed to the fact that, or I should say, I guess, why do you believe that at the same location, you and I are standing side by side in this place, you're feeling nauseous, your head's hurting, you're seeing or hearing things, and I sense and feel nothing, and I'm not getting sick, and I don't see the apparitions, or I don't hear the groans or the walls scraping?
That is the million-dollar question. Okay. Why is it that this affects some people dramatically and others not at all? We don't know. I remember one occasion we were there with a crew from Britain. It was Dead Famous, I think it was, and they wanted to conduct an experiment. I said, okay, I'll set one up. They arrived. What's the experiment? I go, I'll tell you when it's over. Well, the experiment was they didn't know anything about the house in terms of what it was doing to people. They were seven-person crew. All but one of them was sick within an hour.
Wow.
And okay. Displaying symptoms consistent with sensitivity to strong magnetic fields. Maybe this is why some people are sensitive to this and others are not, because their body, for some reason, resonates with that level of energy, while others go, what are you talking about? I feel fine. The owner has really not slept well since he's lived there and has had chronic problems. But the question is, did he have these prior to living in the house, or is the house exacerbating this? We don't know. But I'll tell you what's intriguing. We have the site of one of the most heinous murders in modern America, literally footsteps away. On the other end of it, we've got a honest-to-God geomagnetic anomaly site acknowledged by the U.S. Geological Survey. In the middle, we have apparitions, we have luminous anomalies, we have psychokinetic manifestations, things being thrown at people, we have apports, disembodied voices, and almost every time I was there, which exceeded 20 visits, something happened, which is almost unheard of.
That's unbelievable. Now, is that something that you guys are going to be releasing a documentary on as well?
I don't know. The problem is I can't go back in that house because I can't afford to go to the hospital again.
Right.
My body's telling me it doesn't like the environment. We had another crew that came up there from KCOP, not last year, not Halloween of 2005. The cameraman got sick within minutes. They brought a remote truck, microwave truck. It electronically crashed in front of the house.
Wow.
To pick up a second truck and keep it away from the house. And, the analogy I'll put forward is simple. In order for a boat to float, it needs water.
Right.
Maybe for these things to function in the world we understand, maybe it needs a certain type of geomagnetic environment that's a carrier. We don't know.
Sure, well, that wouldn't make sense. It's like a tuner on a radio, right? You just need to have that. At that point, with the geomagnetic forces, it's, in effect, tuning in what's there. It's because, like we know right now, the radio signals we're producing are going to keep floating around forever. But if you can plug into them, you can listen to them again. So is this geomagnetic force creating the radio, if you will, or the movie screen for us to see the things that are there?
Yeah, there's it's one time we were there with instruments, a storm front was approaching, and the electric field went from a few volts per meter to over several thousand volts per meter. That's when my skin started to burn. I go, that's it, I'm gone.
Yeah, there is a point when you just have to say enough's enough, I would guess.
Right, and then the last visit, we were there with Pat Wheelock from Beyond Investigations, great guy. He helped us setting up sensors, and at about 11:40 p.m., there was a major temperature drop on the third floor, which is the lowest floor. We go down there, I'm walking toward what we call the earthen wall room. There's just an open wall of dirt in there, but part of the hill, because the house is built up against the hill. And I took a step, and it felt like I stepped into a zero-G environment. I got nauseous, disoriented. I blacked out, fell, hit the wall, and my friend goes, what happened? I go, I don't know. You take the compass in that room, a compass, and it just starts to spin. Take a compass in the stairwell. It points south. Then it starts to spin.
Unbelievable.
Objects that are not magnetic, aluminum, plastic, were manifesting magnetic fields. Don't ask me how, because I can't. This is the ultimate field laboratory for a parapsychologist. The problem is, unless I could develop a way to shield myself from this, I can't go back in the house again.
Well, we're going to take our second break of the hour here, Dr. Taff. Stick with us. And all of you, please stay with us as well. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're glad you're here with us. We're here every Sunday night from 10 o'clock to midnight Central Time. Please join us in our live chat just by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the Listen tab. You can listen to our show live there. You can also click on the Live tab. We archive all of our shows, too. So within about 24 to 48 hours, the shows are up on our site, so you can download them and listen to them at any time. We'll be back with more right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show. The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
If you read Taft's Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taft's Paramag takes you where few would ever go. On purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
Two ghosts walk into a bar and see another ghost at the bar point at them and yell, boo. One of the ghosts yells back, boo hoo. And the ghost at the bar yells back, well, you don't have to cry about it. Ah, hell. You try writing this.
You magnificent bastard! I salute you!
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Thank you very much for tuning into the show this evening. I hope you're enjoying it. I know we are. If you've watched any type of paranormal documentaries, shows on Sci-Fi Channel documenting paranormal activity, I know there's been a few specials that have appeared and have gotten some of the highest ratings Sci-Fi has ever had. You've probably recognized our guest, Dr. Barry Taff. And Dr. Taff is with us this evening discussing a lot of his past cases, current things that are going on in the world of the paranormal, some new scientific breakthroughs that have happened that are allowing us to maybe understand a little bit more about what's going on in the paranormal. How far, Dr. Taff, do you think we are from the moment when we can solidly say that this is proof of the paranormal existing and there's no more question of ghosts and poltergeist activity and people thinking it's just somebody crazy?
If we're talking simply about things like remote viewing and precognition and telepathy, you could go into court and win with that. But also with things dealing with ufology, with UFOs and related matters, you could go into court and win a case. When it comes to the poltergeist and the ghost stuff, because of the religious aspect to it, there's a lot more stigma and fear, and that's going to take more time and money. And one of the reasons why we don't know anything is there is no money. And there was a really good book written several years ago. It was called Hunt for the Skinwalker. One of the authors was George Knapp.
Right, we've had him on the show, sure.
Mike dealt with a really incredible case on a ranch in Utah. And what was fascinating in reading the book, all the technology that money could bring to bear, the best minds, they came away with nothing. See, the problem is this. We can't measure what we don't know. And we only have a couple options open to us here. One is that these phenomena, let's stick with the poltergeist stuff, haunting, whatever you want to call it, it's either caused by energies we do know of working in ways we don't understand, or by energies we don't know of working in ways we don't understand. But the bottom line is that whatever we're dealing with seems to affect the energy and matter in the world that we're aware of, and that's all we're able to measure. The best analogy is this. We're measuring the wake of a boat as it moves through the water, but we're unaware of what the boat is.
Okay.
That's it, and that's the problem. It's the blind leading the blind. And the other best analogy is the three blind men holding the elephant. One of the blind men, you know, holds the elephant's trunk and says, it's a hose. The other holds the leg and goes, it's a tree trunk. It's a stump of a tree. The other holds the elephant's tail, thinks it's a rope, none of which are accurate. Because they're only able to perceive a small aspect of the beast. That's where we are today. No one knows what's going on. And if they do claim they know what's going on, it's setting us backwards. But I won't, even though I'd be willing to admit from my perspective that the majority of these phenomena seem to be triggered by living human beings. I'm not ready to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say that the potential for survival of corporeal death, that some consciousness may survive. We can't rule that out. Cannot preclude that.
Have you ever felt like you've been had at a paranormal investigation, that you look at the stuff and then you go back and realize somebody was screwing with you afterwards?
That's only happened in my background once, late 70s, early 80s, I think. Yeah, things had happened, but they stopped. The young kid in the house, the young teenager, wanted attention. We caught him faking it. But other than that, we've never run into a fraud. We run into numerous cases where the people just need psychiatric intervention.
Right.
They need medication and or therapy, and they're bored. They're looking for attention. But that's the exception to the rule. Most of the time, we believe things are happening. The question is, can we document it? Can we go beyond the anecdotal fish story? A big one, but it got away. And if we don't experience it, and we don't measure something relevant, we don't get video images of it, it has no meaning, because it's like, so what? Just another story. And, you know, people always say, do you ever try to get rid of these things? And I go, look, primitive human beings, we didn't understand anything about the universe. But we knew what heat was, we knew what fire was, okay? And it's real hot. And they know that it's coming from this big yellow burning thing up in the sky. So they know the water quenches fire. They keep throwing water up at the sun. Well, they don't know the sun's 93 million miles away, and they don't know that it's fusion. It's not fire per se. Well, we're in the same place. We don't know what we're dealing with, how it works, and why it works the way it does. How can we get rid of it? I mean, a lot of times nothing happens. Sometimes it gets worse. Occasionally it goes away, but most of the time it's like taking a placebo. Has no effect at all.
Tim and I have talked often, you know, being in the recording business like this, you know, and working with magnetics and magnetic tapes and so on. There are, and I'm sure you remember the time they used to be able to come to your home with the bulkers, and they would put them to your TV screen to demagnetize them so that your picture would look right again. It wouldn't be funky and it wouldn't have strange colors.
Right.
But what it effectively does is kind of erases a magnetic field or disperses it. In places where there are quote-unquote residual hauntings, do you believe that there may be ways to degauss that area to clear that magnetic field? I mean, we know that we can go in and change polarity, and we can take something that is magnetized and make it unmagnetized. Do you think that that is a possibility? Is that one way that we can go in and help to remove some of the paranormal phenomena that might be occurring?
I mean, it almost be like degaussing something or grounding it.
Right.
Perhaps, and with respect to what your question was, the case San Pedro, which was Barry Conrad's video, an unknown encounter.
Right.
Long after Jackie Hernandez moved from her bungalow, okay, we lost track of she. It moved with her from San Pedro up to Weldon, which is in Kern County. It moved with her there. Barry was up there with one of our associates, and things kept happening. She came back down to San Pedro. More things were happening. And then we discovered that things were still happening in her old house as well. A crew went in there with beta cam equipment, worked perfectly, it kept failing inside the house. Come out, it would go on. Go back, it would fail. Different families have come and gone in there since 1989. Some experience phenomena, others do not. But what is most intriguing is that many times when Jackie had visited Barry's home, at that time was in Studio City, Barry Conrad's home, that is, after she left, phenomena would break out.
Well, do you think that if it truly is a magnetized field, we know that I can take, and I used to have one of those big magnets when I was a kid, I could take a paperclip which is not magnetized. I could rub it on the magnet for, you know, even a minute, and then I could take it over and other paperclips would begin sticking to that paperclip,
right,
and it would cause its own magnetic trail. Could it be that while Jackie lived in that home, or the gal from the entity case lived in that home, it polarize them, magnetize them, if you will, so that it continued on with them as they went to other locations, and it only was like the paperclip. After a while, you know, an hour or 2 hours later, it's no longer magnetized.
Right.
But depending on the length of time that you subjected it to the original cause, that's what kept it, polarized to keep attracting. Do you think that that might have been what was it? That house is the base. That is the magnetic field. She rubbed in it long enough that it actually stuck to her, so that when she left, it seemed to follow her. It wasn't really following her, but she just kept attracting it because she was now polarized to attract that type of thing. And only in time would it eventually fade. And it got worse as she came back because now you were adding two positives into the same environment again.
I agree with you almost 150%.
Okay.
And it goes beyond even beyond that because, as I said, it seems there are certain locations that due to possibly geomagnetic forces, and it may be more than simply geomagnetic, but that's what we have to call it now.
Right.
If a susceptible person moves into that environment, their body is modified by this field, and then phenomena begins. And then when if they're there long enough, it infects them, for lack of a better word. They move, and it moves with them because it's now being propagated by them away from the source, from the original boundaries. And then it bleeds off over time. And what I call this is a psychovirus, for lack of a better term. The analogy again, your friend's family's sick. You go over there, you touch nothing. You know, you're very careful. You don't eat or drink anything. You say hello, you know, give your regards. You come home to your family. And then in a few days, you and your family are sick with the same thing they had. This may be the same thing, except that it's not a virus, but it has biological-like qualities to it or properties. And, yeah, we don't know. All that we know is that these things keep occurring. And some environments seem to... Now, we didn't bring the instruments we have today to Jackie's little bungalow in San Pedro because we didn't even have them yet. They didn't exist when we were first there.
Well, and I want to cover more of the San Pedro case when we come back after the top of the hour. But let me ask, because I know the listeners are going to get on me for this, with Jackie Hernandez from the San Pedro case, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the gal's name from the original entity case.
Doris Beither.
Now, is Doris still alive? And is she still being bothered in any way? And is Jackie alive? And is she still being bothered in any way?
Okay, as far as Doris, the last anyone heard from Doris Beither was the fall of 1990. Frank DeFelita, she was calling him more regularly, stopped. No one's heard from her. We don't know where she is or if she is. My guess would be in her mid to late 60s now.
Okay.
So we don't know where no one's heard from her. We lost track of her, like I said, in 1990.
Which most likely means then the problem has stopped.
When we met her in 1983, when the film came out, she went to a screening here at Fox, it had all but ended. Hmm. No one's talked to her in the last 17 years. As far as Jackie Hernandez, we actually tried to find her for another show we were doing, and no one knows where she is. She's kind of a transient, not a real stable person. There's a lot of self-medicating going on there. And last time we saw her, was like 9 years ago, she looked really bad. She was not doing well.
Now, do the houses that they occupied at the time of these major hauntings, do the houses still exist?
As far as the San Pedro, yes. And different families have come and gone. Some have experienced phenomena, others had not. Barry Conrad was down there talking to the man who owns the front house on the full property. They were repainting it, and the painter ran out of the place because he said something. He could see and hear things that weren't supposed to be there. That was recently. And as far as the house on Braddock Street in Culver City with Doris, we don't know. People have come and gone, and no, we've never gotten a call or heard anything. Hmm. So we don't. That was a long, long time ago.
Now, is it famous for people? You know, I mean, you know where the house in Amityville is. Everybody knows where that is. You know, I mean, are these homes well known? If people move into them, do they go into it with the understanding that this has a stigma attached to it?
Well, I know in California they have a full disclosure law for realty that if you know someone's died in the house, you're supposed to declare that before the purchase. Also, before the sale, also, I think if you believe or know that the place might be haunted, you're supposed to disclose that as well in California. As far as the Amityville Horror, like I said, that case never impressed me at all.
Right, I know, but I was using more along the lines of, right. You know, it's a famous location and people know it and know where it would be. Do you think that people have gone to live in this house expecting there to be that or going in with the expectation nothing would be there and that's maybe why nothing has happened since?
Belief doesn't seem to bear a strong relationship to any of this. It seems to be your susceptibility to whatever's going on. And we don't know what that means yet. We do have a house, though, in L.A. here on Hollymont. I investigated it 31 years ago. It's still haunted. There's a body is buried under the house from 1922. It's never been exhumed. Many different
And they know that for a fact?
I mean, yeah, well, we found the makeshift grave.
Okay.
And
did you find the body?
We couldn't dig it up.
Okay.
And we didn't have the means, and no one would help us, and we'd have to go to the city about it. And
well, don't they have those, what do they call them, seismographers or so, that they set it on the ground, it'll thump the ground and send back an echo to see if there's body parts?
Yeah, the whole problem is that nobody wanted to do it.
Really?
Okay. And the city, I mean, we had to be done by the owner of the house, the first there. He had no interest in doing it. It was in a tunnel that connected the several homes on the hill from the Prohibition era.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't bury people under your home. And we've had contact with the residents over many years of time. There have been many different people, and it's a high, very powerful drug area. So forget the ghosts. I'd be more worried about flying lead.
Oh, you know what? I think I might have actually been driven past that on my last trip out to California. Is it kind of in a...
up on a hill.
Right, up on a hill, and it's kind of real skinny streets to get around behind. Extremely. Okay, exactly. Then I think I have, I actually was driven past that house when I was out there. Yeah, my friend said, stop, I want to get out and take a picture, and then began to tell me that it was a really bad neighborhood and drug problems and shootings, and I said, no, we're not stopping for a damn picture, let's get rolling.
Now, during the day, it's not a problem. At night.
Yeah, we were there at night, so.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we were doing a show with ABC and the... late 90s, and we left letters in their mailbox that ABC would offer them good money to let us come in. They wouldn't do it. So, but different people. It's a very, very big house. I got to live in there for a couple of weeks in 1976. It was extraordinary.
Well, do you think if people are, you know, if it's been known to be a bad area and bad neighborhood, and especially if drugs are involved, do you think that the drugs involved could be part of what's creating more of the phenomena to continue there?
No. I mean, my guess is if we went onto that property today, we'd find a geomagnetic anomalies.
Okay.
I mean, because living there was like being at the Disneyland of the dead. I mean, it was extraordinary. I mean, one thing after another just didn't stop.
With these geomagnetic anomalies, though, is it kind of like a black hole for spirits? A spirit gets too close and it's sucked into this and it can't leave? Is that your belief is?
I have no idea. Just like I said, these environments may act as conveyances or... The same way a boat needs water to float, maybe these things need a certain environment in order to function in this role, in our realm.
All right. Well, we're going to cut you short here real quick, Doc. We got to go to our top of the hour break. Everybody, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Stick with us because we're coming back for the second hour with Dr. Barry Taff. And as you know, we don't usually compel with two full hours to one guest. But Dr. Taff has a lot to share with us and somebody I've been excited about talking to since we started the show 2 years ago. So stick with us. We're going to be back with more. And if you have any questions, concerns, remember this evening's show is pre-taped because Tim and I are out at the Waverly Hills event. So we are unable to take your questions for Dr. Taff. But if you do want to email us questions for Dr. Taff for a future show, we will do our best to have him back on. But why don't you hold on? We might cover what you want to know during this second hour. So stick with us. We'll be back with more right after this.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community. because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.